Coming up on The Source, St. Philip's College first opened its doors in 1898, teaching sewing skills to African-American girls. Today, it's a busy junior college that's indispensable to San Antonio's diverse communities and to the region's workforce. We'll hear the story of how St. Philip's College came to be and the amazing personalities that put the little school with high hopes on the path to becoming a modern institution of higher learning and the official point of pride on San Antonio's east side. And later on The Source, it's the perfect summer job, a lifeguard at a city pool. We'll find out what it takes to become a lifeguard and how to get the job. That's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
The Source is made possible in part by a grant from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.
This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. St. Philip's has the distinction of being the only school in the nation that is a historically black college and a Hispanic-serving institution. It was in 1898 that St. Philip's Normal and Industrial School began its first classes, teaching sewing to African-American girls. Today, St. Philip's is a fully accredited junior college, providing 85 associate's degrees in three categories: liberal arts and sciences, health sciences, and applied science and technology. Some programs include business administration, chemical research, philosophy, and mechanical engineering. More than 80 certificate programs are available, including aircraft technology, computer maintenance technology, early childhood studies, and surgical technology. How St. Philip's grew from such modest origins to becoming a significant part of San Antonio's community education system is told in a new book, St. Philip's College, A Point of Pride on San Antonio's East Side, written by Marie Pennell Thurston, coordinator of the Oral History Project for St. Philip's.
Why did I write this book? Well, I have to give credit to Dr. Angie Runnels, who was the 12th president of the college. She hired me to do something else initially, and then she changed her mind before I ever started and said, I have something else I'd like you to do. I'd like you to write a book. And, of course, I was surprised, but I said, oh, sure, I can do that. And I didn't know anything at all about the school. I learned after I came here what an illustrious history this school has. And that's how it began. And Dr. Ronald said, you know, this school has a history that must be told. And there really wasn't very much written about the school. That's how I got started.
So was it a discovery experience for you?
It really was. And what a discovery it was. And I think almost everyone that discovers this school, because it is an untold story, everyone that discovers this school is just blown away by it.
So let's talk about how St. Philip's College came to be. It has a very rich history, as you said, but let's start at the beginning. How did it happen?
It happened because, it goes back to the fact that blacks in San Antonio, and we were called Negroes at that time, were discontented with the worship experience that they had. And so they approached the bishop of the Episcopal Church here and asked to be taken under the bishop's wing and establish a church for the colored people. Bishop Robert Barnwell Elliott. He was the first bishop of the Missionary District of Western Texas. And he was concerned about the problem of freed people and their worship. And so he began to help them, but he died an early death. And his replacement was Reverend James Steptoe Johnston. And fortunately for the people, Reverend Johnston accepted the offer from the Negroes in the diocese, and he organized the first Episcopal Church for Negroes in San Antonio, and it was called St. Philip's Church. Now, this church is still alive and well. and it's a working church today. And the school, once the church became established, then the school grew out of the church. The parents wanted, they looked around and decided they wanted something other than the education that they were getting, that their children was receiving. They wanted more.
So when we talk about St. Philip's College, people don't really get the connection right away that it is connected to a church. You know, obviously there's a saint there, but it is the Episcopal Church.
Mm-hmm.
From the church, they decided they needed to provide...
Well, for the children, education where there was very little. And they wanted more than just the basic...
And so what year are we talking about now?
Well, the school itself started in 1898. The school started as a sewing class for girls. And I think it started with about 12 students initially. Well, let me go back a little farther than that. When the parents in San Antonio, in that church, they heard about a black woman who was a seamstress. And she came from Galveston, relocated to San Antonio. And they approached her about offering a sewing class. Bishop Johnston hired Mrs. Laura Jackson from Galveston to teach their children to sew. And St. Philip's School grew out of that sewing class from the Sunday School of St. Philip's Church. And the sewing class was so successful that the parents wanted to continue. And they wanted a private day school for their children, just like the white school that was unavailable to them.
So that's really an incredible, humble beginning for an institution now that really teaches, advanced coursework in so many important areas.
Yes, but that's an understatement, because this school started in a one-room place, very... How can I say? Very little in the way of amenities. The school began, they didn't have enough of anything other than excited children, because the supplies and things that they needed were in short supply. They didn't have very much of that. But the children wanted to learn. As a matter of fact, one of the members of the education committee, white members of the education committee, the church, the Episcopal diocese, came to visit the school after it had been in existence for a couple of years. And they mentioned in their report that there wasn't a scratch on the walls. The floors were in excellent condition, and one of the members wrote that he'd never seen a school that was as clean as this one. The children took care of the school. This was their school, and they took care of it.
Okay, tell me about, she's featured prominently in your book about the history of St. Philip's College, so tell me about Miss Artemisia Bowden.
Miss Bowden gave 52 years of her life to St. Philip's. She came in 1902. She was the third administrator of the school. When she came, she was scarcely more than a child herself. She had finished St. Athanasius School. She went to school in North Carolina when her mother passed away. When she finished the school, she worked for a year in North Carolina. Bishop Johnston heard about her. He visited the school that she had attended. He heard about her, and the teachers told him what a marvelous student she was. And she accepted the job. Now, the interesting thing about it is when she came to San Antonio, she had never met Bishop Johnston. She didn't know anyone in San Antonio. But she came, and she accepted the job as the principal of the school, and she stayed for 52 years. She gave her life to the school. people refer to the school as Miss Bowden's school.
Basically, she really formed the school and to pretty much put it on the path that it is today.
Oh, yes. Bishop Johnston actually put it on the path, and she came. She was a flair teacher, as I said, and when she came, she overwhelmingly embraced the ideals of the Episcopal Church. She stayed with that and just provided that sound basis.
She created a modern institution of higher education.
Yes, she did. She did, because the school, under her, the school became a junior college, and she looked around, and there wasn't a school open to the black children, a school of higher education, within 200 miles. There wasn't anything in San Antonio for them. And she looked around, and even though times were difficult and they struggled to keep the doors open, she saw this as an opportunity.
So today, St. Philip's College is part of the Alamo Area College?
The Alamo Community College District, yes. It is.
And it is well connected and a big part of the infrastructure for many of San Antonio's biggest industries.
Yes, it is. St. Philip's is the oldest college in the Alamo Community College District. There are five of them, and St. Philip's is the oldest. St. Philip's coordinates with the industries in San Antonio so that whatever their needs are, we try to fulfill it if it is at all possible. And yes, we do work hand in hand with Toyota and other industries in the city.
So it's one of the few remaining historically black junior colleges in the country, but it's also a Hispanic serving institution?
It is. As a matter of fact, it is the only institution in the United States with the title Historically Black and Hispanic Serving Institution. It is the only one in the nation.
So tell me about how that helps form the identity of St. Philip's College and how it has a unique place in San Antonio's education system.
Well, St. Philip's began as an all-black school, but as you know, San Antonio's population of blacks is small. And the college probably could not exist and would certainly not be what it is today if it were restricted to blacks only. The college really began to grow with the integration of the school, and San Antonio's Hispanic population is, I think, the largest population in San Antonio. And so it is also the largest population on the campus here at St. Philip's. That's one of the unique things about this school, the fact that it is or began as a black school. It is, and it's still, I mean, that is our history and will forever be. But it is not just a black school. It is a school where blacks and many others attend now. It is, from the very beginning, the school was and is committed to excellence. And so I'll give you this example. One of Miss Bowden's favorite sayings was, find something to do and do that something well. And our present president, Dr. Lawson, says that St. Philip's continues to practice the guiding principle of an open door policy, meaning that the school provides opportunities for all who come, not just the academically talented, but those students that are academically challenged as well. Dr. Reynolds, who said that if a student, black, white, Hispanic. However, if that student can find his or her way to St. Philip's, then St. Philip's will do all that we can to see that he or she is successful.
Marie Pannell Thurston has written the book, St. Philip's College, A Point of Pride on San Antonio's East Side, which documents the beginnings and development of St. Philip's, the only school in the nation that is a historically black college and a Hispanic-serving institution. The book is published by Texas A&M University Press. There's still more ahead on The Source, becoming a city lifeguard. It's a great summer job for a teenager. We'll hear how to get the job and what's up with San Antonio's public pool system. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Source. I'm David Martin Davies. It's hard to tell that it's the end of January right now. It's warm and sunny outside. Soon we'll be melting under the 100-degree sun, looking for a cool place to dive into. And the City of San Antonio's Parks and Recreation Department is already gearing up for those summer days, and they're looking for lifeguards. Kenny Gonzalez of the City Parks and Rec Department Aquatics Division is here to explain that and more about the city's pool system.
We start recruiting for all our summer programs, especially with swimming pools. We actually are going to open up our pools early this year like we did last year. We opened up four pools during spring break. We'll open up again in May. And then, of course, we open them up in the summer. So recruiting starts now, and that's what we're looking for staff to work these pools.
And you're looking for lifeguards for San Antonio's pool system. And so how many lifeguards does the San Antonio usually employ?
We try to hire about 230 lifeguards to when we're fully open. That's how many we'll be using. We are, like I said, we are going to have four pools open in spring break and then in May. But once all 24 pools open up, then that's when we need the full complement of lifeguards.
And I should disclose that I was a San Antonio Parks and Recreation lifeguard many years ago over at Woodlawn Pool.
Really?
And so, yeah, so I have that in my DNA. So these lifeguards that you're looking for, they can be ages 16 and up. So this is a perfect summer job.
Oh, perfect summer job. I mean, it's a great, like you said, 16 years and up. We actually start recruiting. We start what we call our recruitment parties starting next month. On February 9th is our first lifeguard recruitment party. And what we do there is we have you come in if you are interested in the job, and that's where you can come in and you can take the test to see if you qualify to become a lifeguard. There are some prerequisites to becoming a lifeguard. You know, one, you do have to know how to swim, but you got to be able to pass a few tests. And once you can pass those tests, then we'll train you to become a lifeguard, and then we'll find you a job this summer.
So what's it pay?
Starting pay, first-year lifeguard, $902 an hour.
So you said you're at these lifeguard parties? They didn't have parties, right? We had no parties back when I did this. So what's going on here?
The first one is February 9th, and it's from 2 to 4, and we'll have refreshments, we'll have drink, we'll have water. But basically what you have to do is you come in, you take the prerequisite test, which is the test consists of a 300-yard swim nonstop, which includes the front crawl and the breaststroke. If you can do that 300 yards nonstop, and it's not timed, so you don't have to go super fast or anything, but you just have to do it in one continuous swim. After you do that, then you have to go down to the bottom of our 13-foot diving well, pick up a 10-pound brick, and bring that to the side of the pool and get it out of the water in under a minute 40. That's another test. And then the final test is if you can tread water using your legs only for 2 minutes. So if you could do those three tests, then you're eligible to you're qualified to get into one of our lifeguard classes. And then once you're in the lifeguard classes, and we offer these once a week, so they start every Monday all the way up until the pools open in June. So there's always a chance to take a class if you miss one week. Another one starts on the following Monday. But you'll get into a class, and that's when you learn your first aid, your CPR, of course, all your life-saving skills, and basically how to become and what you need to be a lifeguard. And you'll be certified. Certification is good for 2 years. And the training
is that becoming a WSI, as we called it when I was
Well, WSI it can be another. It's like a step up from lifeguarding because that's when you become to learn how to be an instructor, to be a swim instructor. So, yeah, and then there's that training. Once you do become a lifeguard and you are working in our system, we can train you to be WSIs, which are saltwater safety instructors.
Now, the endurance swim, you said, has to be continuous, so I can't be hanging on the edge halfway through catching my breath, and you just got to hit that edge and go.
Right, hit the edge and go. I mean, what we're looking for is endurance. You look for those swimmers, and a lot of the kids that are on swim teams, they can handle that test pretty easily. It's the ones that don't swim a lot, but maybe are strong swimmers. They just don't know it, but it's really about endurance and making sure that they know the proper strokes when they're swimming. And it's not fast, like I said. It's about endurance when taking that test.
So let's talk about the training and being an active swimmer, because, you know, San Antonio has kind of turned a corner as far as running is concerned. You know, almost every weekend there's a fantastic running event, 5Ks, half marathons. We've really seemed to embrace that. And I see more people going out to do swimming events and triathlon type stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that was one of the reasons why we wanted to open up these pools during spring break. We wanted to open them up in May because during those times we do offer lap swimming for if you do have those swimmers, those endurance swimmers, those competitive swimmers that want to swim laps at our outdoor pools. We have the four pools set up so you can swim laps early in the morning before work. They're going to be open from like 7:30 to 9:30 in the morning. So you can go get a swim in and then go to work. And during spring break, they're going to be open that week of March 12th through the 17th or the Tuesday. It's going to be open Tuesday through Sunday. 12th through the 17th, but that Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they'll be open for lap swimming in the morning, and then they'll be open the rest of the day for recreational swim.
Kenny Gonzalez is with the city's Parks and Rec Department, the Aquatics Division, and they're looking for lifeguards. You've been listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. You can check us out online at tpr.org, and you can comment on The Source. And The Source is a production of KSTX, Texas Public Radio.